नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। शुक उवाच नन्दपाथी वच्चा सौरा नन्दपति वच्चा शोरेर नामृषेति विचिन्तयन् हरिं जगाम शरणम् उत्पाथागम संकितः Shukadeva Goswami continued, My dear King, while Nanda Maharaj was on the way home, he considered that what Vasudeva had said could not be false or useless. There must have been some danger of disturbances in Gokula. As Nanda Maharaj thought about the danger for his beautiful son Krishna, he was afraid and he took shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Controller. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Whenever there is danger, the pure devotee thinks of the protection and shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is also advised in Bhagavad Gita. Anityam asukam lokam imam prapya bhajasvamam. In this material world, there is danger at every step. Padam padam yad vipadam. Therefore, a devotee has no other course than to take shelter of the Lord at every step. Shukadeva Goswami continued, My dear King, while Nanda Maharaj was on the way home, he considered that what Vasudeva had said could not be false or useless. There must have been some danger of disturbances in Gokul. As Nanda Maharaj thought about the danger for his beautiful son, Krishna, he was afraid and he took shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Controller. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 6, entitled The Killing of the Demon Putana, Text 1. In the previous chapters, Nanda Maharaj, who had just celebrated the joyous festival of Nandotsava, the birth of Krishna as his son, he was required to go to Mathura to pay taxes to King Kamsa. The variations of experiences that we are obliged or destined to pass through in this world are quite extraordinary. One day, the most joyous event of his life
seeing Krishna face to face in this, in the love of a father for a child. We have seen at Bhaktivedanta Hospital when a father gives birth to a healthy little son, how happy they are. They usually give gifts to people to celebrate. Well, Nanda Maharaj had the natural affection and joy of having a son, plus the extra feature that the all-attractive, all-beautiful, supremely lovable personality of Godhead was that son. So what was his happiness? To see, not just to see Krishna, but to see Krishna as a father sees a newborn child of his own. And then, just immediately after that, he had to go to see Kamsa. First he's offering all big festival for Krishna with so much wealth, and then he has to offer so much of his wealth to Kamsa in taxes. So he was dutiful. It's the nature of this world. Whoever we are, there's a certain responsibilities that we have. Sometimes we like them and sometimes we don't like them. Obviously, Nanda Maharaj was not looking forward to giving his taxes to Kamsa, as he was quite well aware of the very, very cruel demoniac rule of Kamsa. In fact, his dearmost friend and cousin brother, Basudev and Devaki, were imprisoned by Kamsa. Imprisoned by Kamsa for years, and all of their baby children were murdered by Kamsa. So Nanda Maharaj was going to pay taxes to him. But out of social obligation, he had to do it. While he was there, in his tax-paying mode, he understood that Basudev had been released from prison just a few days before, hardly a couple days before. It was actually on the early morning of the late night of Krishna's birth that Basudev, after years in prison, was released. And Nanda wanted to see Basudev, and Basudev wanted to see Nanda. So Basudev came to see Nanda in a secret place so that Kamsa didn't know what was happening. And this meeting of these two great fathers of the Supreme Personality of Godhead was such an incredible historical event. Don't you wish their conversation was videotaped? But it's even better because Shukadev Goswami has spoken it. We should know that reading Srimad Bhagavatam is more powerful than any video or digital format could ever present to the world. Because sometimes we become very much enamored by the sensual experience of things, but we don't understand the substance of something. So in the entertainment industry of movie technology or cinema technology, you know, first there were this black and white, and they would crank something and you'd see little figures bouncing around, and there was no speaking, and then they added sound to it, then they added color to it, and then they made it in such a way that you could see it right in your own home, and then they made it digital, so it's practically as seeing live in action with such crisp and colorful experience. But does it actually improve the quality of the experience of watching it? Does it more affect your heart? Whether it's an old black and white movie or whether it's a full digital color on a massive screen that's as big as your house. You know, round screens and flat screens, and always looking for a better quality screen to enjoy. But we find that this process of shravanam, or hearing, is most powerful. Because what affects us is not necessarily the physical medium, but it's the potency of where it's of the source of what we're receiving. So in reality, 5,000 years ago, Maharaj Parikshit was sitting and listening to Shukadev Goswami describing these stories. He wasn't seeing it with his eyes, he was just hearing. It wasn't that Shukadev Goswami had a PowerPoint presentation. And as he was talking, he was giving him visual effects. But Shukadev Goswami was just speaking with realization and with love from his heart. And Parikshit Maharaj was in absolute rapt attention. Yes, you know, even watching the best television, could you stay up for 7 days and seven nights without drinking coffee or anything like that to somehow or other stay awake? Parikshit Maharaj didn't drink anything. He didn't eat anything. And all the sages there for 7 days, seven nights, they didn't sleep. They were just hearing Shukadev Goswami. They didn't need PowerPoints or video, you know, experiences. They were seeing and feeling within the core of their hearts Krishna's pastimes through hearing. And the reality is that exact same experience is accessible to everyone at any time simply by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam or by reading Srimad Bhagavatam. There's absolutely no difference. When Shukadev Goswami spoke, Vedavyas wrote down exactly what he said, the essence of what he said. And through Vedavyas's writing and Shukadev Goswami speaking, and then Srila Prabhupada, with his unlimited, pure, ecstatic love, he's translating it into our known language and explaining incredible purports, which are... Shukadev Goswami made it sweeter, the sound of Krishna's pastimes, because it was through the lips and through the heart of his love. And all of these great acharyas like Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, all of these great souls, they are tasting Shukadev Goswami's words and they are speaking through their writing. So it's even sweeter. And Prabhupada's giving us everything and everyone with his own ecstatic love. And that's what's here. Simply by hearing, we can experience Krishna's pastimes in full. We're there, according to our consciousness. It's not that we're simply reading something that happened 5,000 years ago. Because Krishna has Nitya Lila. That means every pastime of Krishna is forever taking place somewhere within the universes of this creation. And Krishna's pastimes are beyond time. Sometimes to give authenticity to materialistic people
who are very much affected by time. We explain, you know, how this happened 5,000 years ago and how Krishna appeared 500 years ago and how Murari Gupta Prabhu appeared just about 5 seconds ago. Very well. Welcome home. But actually, these are timeless stories. And if we're actually receptive with faith, and we're attentive to hear with enthusiasm, as Parikshit Maharaj was, then we are factually there. Or Krishna in his pastime is here, either way you want to say it. In bhakti, you can say the same thing in so many ways. Krishna's here when we're, and we're there. Factually, when we are discussing this story, we are sitting there between Vasudeva and Nanda, observing with our eyes, with our ears, with our, all of our senses. We're there, observing their conversation in Mathura. And we're also there when Kamsa's, you know, doing whatever he's doing. So we are being given entrance into the eternal pastimes through Shravanam, through hearing. So we can use all this video equipment that's always harassing me when because Prabhupada said, if you want to take a thorn out of your foot, you use another thorn. But the problem is usually you end up with two thorns in your foot. You're not very, very careful. So modern technology, because people are so much addicted to modern technology, it's a medium, so we will use modern technology to somehow or other free people from the influence of modern technology, so that they can actually have the experience of natural life with Krishna, with God. But in reality, we're not dependent on these things. We're dependent on Krishna. And Krishna gives himself in universal ways that are timeless. In every situation, we can hear and we can chant the glories of the Lord. The medium may adjust according to time and place and circumstance. What we must be very careful of is the content of the medium must be very pure and intact. This is the idea of parampara. Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, when they were writing their books, they were carving the Sanskrit letters in palm leaves and preparing all sorts of natural paper, natural ink. It took a long time. Every single letter was hand-printed personally by them. And now we have Srila Prabhupada used a dictaphone where he just spoke and it was recorded and then somebody else wrote it down. And there's word processors. Srinivasacharya, Narottam Das Thakur, Shamananda Goswami, you know, they just had one set of all the books. And they, to bring it to Bengal, they had to put them in boxes and then put them on the back of ox carts and had guards because there were so many dacoits and everything else because they had to go through all sorts of jungles for practically 1,000 miles. They were walking on foot with this one set of books on ox carts.
just to bring the books to the place. And now, it took months, and then in so many difficulties, the only set of books were stolen. Now, you know, all the books are, you know, digital, and you just press one button, you know, to send. And within a couple minutes, the books could go anywhere you want in the world. Same books. Yes? If you want to send it from Vrindavan to Bengal, you just... If you want to send it to Africa, to America. The medium of the books, and millions of people at the same time could download them, read them. So the medium is not important. What's important is the content, because the book is, it's the same sound vibration from the heart of the love of the same person. Devotees are not attached, to the necessary external features of the medium. We are attached to the essence, to the message, to the content. That is eternal. It is not subjected to any situation within this ever-changing temporary world. Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev, they were so happy to see each other. Can you imagine Vasudev's joy? He was living with his wife, which was absolutely wonderful, Devaki. But besides her, he wasn't seeing anyone but asuras. He was only seeing Kamsa and Kamsa's guards and Kamsa's ministers. He was in prison. And after all these years, now he's meeting his very, very, very best friend and brother. And not only that, but they shared ecstatic love for Krishna. And increasing the nature of the affection between Vasudev and Devaki is Vasudev knew that the most beloved and precious of all his love in his life was Krishna, his only son. And he entrusted his son Krishna to Nanda Maharaj. So can you imagine the affection, the love between Nanda and Vasudev? But at the same time, Vasudev understood Kamsa's mentality. At this time, when Vasudev was free from prison, Kamsa had already apologized and promised that I am your servant. But Vasudev did not trust him, because he knew a man who cannot control mind and senses, they cannot be true to their word. Circumstances will adulterate their honesty. A person who is like Vasudev, what is the difference between Vasudev and Kamsa? Vasudev, to save Devaki, promised Kamsa, I will give you all the children that are born to Devaki. And Vasudev knew well he'll probably murder them. But because he's had such full control of his mind and senses, because he was so fully dependent on Krishna, on God, he was true to his word. He gave the children. And here's Kamsa. He couldn't be true to his word to anybody or anything, because he had no control of mind and senses. He was not depending on God. He was depending on his own intelligence and his own powers.
He promised Devaki and Vasudev, you're free. I apologize. I did wrong. But Vasudev understood that that could change at any moment and Krishna's life will be in danger. He knew what would happen. Nanda Maharaj, the dearest friend, after so many years, Vasudev has the association of such a brother and a devotee. But he's so selfless. He's not thinking of himself. Now I have some satsang. Finally, after all these years. He's thinking of Krishna. He's telling Nanda Maharaj, you better go back now. Immediately. Go back. Something may be happening there. It's very interesting how these two fathers of God were both under this yogamaya power of God. Neither of them really knew what was behind the scenes. Here we have Nanda Maharaj. He has absolutely no trace of an idea that the son that he loves more than his life was brought to Gokul by Vasudev, who's standing right in front of him. He didn't know that. He was just thinking, this is the son that, you know, Yashoda Mai had from me. He didn't understand he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he didn't understand that he was brought by Vasudev. And Vasudev didn't tell him. But at the same time, Vasudev didn't understand that this was actually Nanda's son. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains from the Harivamsa. And Prabhupada tells in brief in his purports, Jiva Goswami and Gopal Champu goes into great detail about the mystery of Krishna's birth. Krishna was simultaneously born to Vasudev and Nanda, or Devaki and Yashoda. And when Devaki asked the beautiful forearm form of Narayan, who was in the prison cell, to hide that form from Kamsa and take the form of an ordinary baby, then Yogamaya took the little baby child that was born of Nanda and Yashoda and invisibly took him to the prison cell of Kamsa, and that forearm Vishnu just merged into the original form of baby Krishna. So Vasudev thinks he knows what Nanda Maharaj doesn't know. Vasudev is thinking, he thinks it's his son, but it's my son. I'm the knower of the truth. Nanda Maharaj doesn't know. He had a daughter. The daughter went to the sky somewhere. But Krishna's my son. He doesn't know this. But he thinks he knows. But what he doesn't know is it actually was Nanda Maharaj's son. So they're both in transcendental illusion. And yet they're both completely enlightened in transcendental knowledge. So no one can know Krishna in truth, in full. Vedaham samatitani varatamanani charjana bhavashyane chabutani mam tu vedana kasht. Krishna says, I know everything happening in the past, everything happening in the present. I know all things in the future. I know every living being, their every thought, their every word, their every action, wherever they are. But no one knows me in full. Even the most transcendentally enlightened personalities, nobody can know Krishna. In fact, Krishna is so unlimited. We read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, even Krishna doesn't know himself in full, by his own will. See, we don't know
we cannot know Krishna in full because we're jiva atmas, and Krishna's the Paramatma. Bhagavan is the source of the Paramatma. So he has unlimited qualities, unlimited everything. So our perfection is to know Krishna according to how Krishna, by his own sweet will, reveals himself to us. That's the ultimate perfection of life. But it's infinitesimal of Krishna's complete glories. Because even though Krishna has complete glories, the completion is ever expanding. So in that sense, it's always complete, and it's never complete, because complete means the final, yes? It means there's nothing beyond it. So Krishna is complete, and he is final, and there is nothing beyond him, but always expanding, always growing. So he's eternally expanding complete. It's inconceivable. You cannot figure it out. You cannot fathom it. But we can bow our heads before that truth that is so far beyond us, even in the highest liberated state. And the more we're liberated, the more we realize how we can't understand Krishna. A neophyte devotee thinks, I know Krishna. I know Krishna was born of Vasudeva and Devaki, and not only that, I've read some of the commentaries of the Acharyas, so I know so many details that you don't know. I know you don't know. Krishna laughing at us. But actually, what do we know? We get some details from the Acharyas, which is pure, unalloyed information. But at every moment, Krishna's performing unlimited pastimes. Everywhere. So the more we actually understand Krishna, the more we're humbled by that and realize that Krishna is so infinite and Krishna is so great and Krishna's love is so all-pervading that I don't know Krishna. But in that state, we surrender to Krishna. Surrender is not about what we know or what we have control over. Surrender is the feeling of such humility, complete dependence on the love and the power and the grace of God. So here we find Nanda is talking to Vasudeva. I have my son Krishna, who was born yesterday in Gokul. And he's giving Vasudeva the information, not knowing that Vasudeva is thinking that, Nanda, I'm not going to tell you what's happening. I know you don't know. It's my son. It's not your son. It's my son. But I'm not going to tell you that. But what neither of them know is it actually is Nanda's son. And also, what Vasudeva is saying is absolutely true. And what Nanda's thinking is absolutely true. Even though there's a total contradiction between the two. Welcome to the path of bhakti. This is the dynamics of love of God. There are so many apparent contradictions. And if we don't understand the spirit and the power behind these contradictions, we could become bewildered, we could lose our faith, we can do so many things. But if we understand the inconceivable power behind the contradictions, it only deepens and heightens our understanding that there is no contradiction. Contradictions on the transcendental realm are only a dynamic to increase the pleasure, the thrill, the excitement of the lila.
So here, they're both thinking in contradictory words, you know, ideas. Nanda's thinking he's my son. Vasudev's thinking he's my son. Nanda's thinking, or Vasudev's thinking he doesn't know. Nanda's thinking he doesn't know. But actually, they both knew. And they both didn't know. And they're both enlightened beings. And they both love each other because they both love Krishna. So Vasudeva is willing to sacrifice as he's been willing. He was having children all along, watching them getting killed just for the sake of Krishna's mission. And now after all that, he finally gets some association and he tells them, go back. Because he was thinking of Krishna's health and Krishna's mission. And here Nanda Maharaj is returning to Gokul. And today I'm not going to go beyond this verse, which sometimes I do. The incredible consciousness of Nanda Maharaj as he's walking home. And the transcendental pastime that Krishna's performing here through the mind of his devotee, Nanda Maharaj. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. He's the source of Narayan. He's the source of Vishnu. He's the source of all avatars. He's the Purnavatar, the full, complete manifestation of the Absolute Truth. And although all of the other incarnations, the Leela avatars, the Purusha avatars, so many different varieties or categories of avatars, they are all one and non-different than Krishna, the same person, but revealing various features of that one Absolute Truth, revealing various proportions of his full opulence. But Krishna is manifesting forever the complete full opulence of everything. His other incarnations are partial. And it is this Krishna who is, with his full-fledged power, opulence, beauty, knowledge, strength, fame, renunciation, wealth. It's that Krishna that's laying as a helpless little baby child on the lap of Yashoda. And Nanda Maharaj is so eager to get back to Gokul to see little baby Gopal. But because Vasudev didn't say anything specifically, he just indicated, you better go back. He asked about Krishna's welfare and said, you better go back. Nanda Maharaj understood with his very subtle intelligence, there must be danger imminent to Krishna if Vasudeva is sending me back so fast. So in that state, it explains here that he was afraid. As Nanda Maharaj thought about the danger for his beautiful son Krishna, he was afraid. Bajahure mana sri nanda nandana abhaya charanara vindare. Govinda Das prays, when we take shelter of Sri Nanda Nandana, the son of Nanda, you become fearless. But Nanda is afraid. This is another one of those contradictions we're talking about. Because in this song, specifically, Krishna is Sri Nanda Nandana. If you take shelter of Sri Nanda Nandana, you will be fearless. But Nanda is fearful.
How sweet. But his fear is millions of times higher spiritual platform than being fearless. That is Nanda. And that is why Krishna is Nandanandana. Krishna isn't Nandanandana, the son and of Nanda Maharaj, because Nanda's fearless. Krishna's Nandanandana because Nanda is fearful. He's the son of Nanda because of the nature of Nanda's love, that he's worried about his son. So fear for Krishna is love. Fear based on our own egoistic, selfish perceptions is illusion. So Nanda Maharaj was materially completely a fearless person. But on the Yogamaya platform, he was a completely fearful person because his fear was based on selfless, unmotivated, unconditional, ecstatic love for Krishna. And Yashodamai, Shukadeva Goswami, he was fearless. He was already Brahman realized. He was beyond the dualities of this world. Can you imagine how detached this person is? It was time for him to be born from the womb of his mother, and he just decided, forget this birth stuff. I'm just going to stay right here. You know, he really applied this principle that you don't have to change your physical location to be God conscious. You know, we've heard this before. You don't have to change your position. Just remember Krishna. Well, he was really extreme like that. Okay, here I am now. I'm in the womb of my mother. No need to change anything. He stayed there for 12 years. The pregnancy deadline was 9 months. But he stayed inside the womb of his mother for 12 years. Didn't see the light of day. Didn't get any nice prasad. Yeah, so I don't know what babies eat when they're in the womb. You know, some, you know, the mother somehow or other, you know, feeds the baby with something. Probably doesn't taste very good. You doctors probably know better than me what it is the baby eats in the womb. They don't even eat with their mouth. You know, because the tongue is a very important element that everyone wants to satisfy. Yes. Well, when you're in the womb of your mother, you don't eat anything with your tongue. You know, food somehow or other just, I guess, goes through that tube, yes, and goes into you, and you don't know what's going on. It's like being an IV or something. For any of you who have been on IVs in intensive care, you just want to get out and eat prasad, you know? Forget about all this nourishment coming through my veins and this tubes hanging there. Well, Shukadeva Goswami was willing to stay in IV for his whole life in his mother's womb. No, couldn't see anything, couldn't hear anything, couldn't eat anything. He was self-satisfied. He was totally fearless. And yet, at the culmination of his ecstasies of love, he's glorifying Yashodamai for always being in the anxiety of fear for Krishna. He's relishing, he's tasting this. He's already spoken the whole 9 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam describing the greatest sages of Dhruva and Prahlad and Ambarish and the Prachetas and Ranti Dev and all of these great, great, enlightened, fully realized saints in the path of devotion. And now he's relishing the highest pleasure by describing the residents of Vrindavan. And they're all afraid for Krishna. Here we have Sri Nanda, who's the father of Sri Nandanandana,
who's afraid for Krishna. And what does he do in his fear for Krishna? And it's a really deep, serious fear for Krishna, because he loves Krishna. He's taking shelter of Krishna in order to protect Krishna. But he doesn't know that Krishna is Krishna. Harival. He's taking shelter of Narayan to protect Krishna. But Narayan is Krishna. We see in a later chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam where Arjuna is looking for the children of that dead Brahmin, and Krishna puts him on a chariot and says, come, let's go find him. And they go beyond the cosmic manifestation practically to Mahavishnu. Krishna brings Arjuna to Mahavishnu. The size, the power of Mahavishnu. Can you imagine having darshan of Mahavishnu? Of course, in many temples in South India, there's Mahavishnu, different Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, but to actually see the Mahavishnu of the cosmos in his full-scale form, he's really Maha. He's really great. You know, we say Mahavishnu, Mahavishnu, but we don't really meditate on what Maha means when it comes to Karanodakshayi Vishnu. He's so great that he breathes while he's in sleep. Sleeping. Yoga Nidra. He's sleeping. And what do you accomplish when you sleep? We think we're Maha. We think we're great.
Yes.
I'm better than you. You only know this, I know this. You can do this, but I can do this. You've accomplished this, but I have accomplished this. We like to think that we're Maha, we're great. But Mahavishnu, his greatness. You sleep, you don't know what's happening. And after you sleep, if you're civilized, you take a bath. Because you've kind of, because all you did all night, you got some rest, that's true. You may have had some crazy dreams that you're trying to figure out, but otherwise you just kind of got dirty, you know? And you take a bath. But Mahavishnu, he doesn't take a bath after. He just sleeps, and as he's sleeping, he breathes. And in his exhalation, the entire cosmic manifestation, all the universes and all the planets and all the universes are created by him. And all living entities are impregnated within those universes. And the universes are hardly the size of the pores of his body. Not the earth, not the planets, but the entire universes. No. You can't even see the pores in your body. I challenge anyone in this room, medical doctors or brahmacharis, whatever you may be, can you tell me how many pores are in your body? Well, Murari Gupta, you're a doctor. So we don't even know, and we can't even, you know, kind of see them, we can't even see them. And relatively, Mahavishnu has a body, but the entire universes are coming out of single pores. That's how big he is. And here Arjuna is seeing Mahavishnu face to face in the Karna ocean. And what does Mahavishnu do? Mahavishnu is, the first thing he does is he offers obeisances to Krishna, who's Arjuna's friend and chariot driver.
He's offering obeisances. Mahavishnu understands you are,
we're both supreme, but of supreme, you're supremely supreme. I'm subordinately supreme because I'm emanating from you. I'm existing because of your will. I'm a partial expansion of you, Krishna.
So Mahavishnu was worshiping Krishna. And that's the Krishna of Dwarka. The Krishna of Dwarka is meditating on the supreme opulence of himself in Gokul, of Vrindavan. So little baby Krishna is more full than the Krishna of Dwarka, and more full than Garbhodakshay Vishnu, the father of Brahma, or Mahavishnu, the father of all of existence.
And he's a little baby. And Nanda Maharaj is so afraid for his little baby. And Krishna's making him afraid.
And he's taking shelter of Krishna to protect Krishna, but he doesn't know that it's the same Krishna. So this is the dynamic of bhakti. Krishna puts us in situations to help us to take shelter. And here it is done in the highest platform of spontaneous love. Even the greatest personalities, they take shelter constantly of the Lord. Sharanagati. Thakur Bhaktivinoda, he descended from the spiritual world, fully enlightened, fully realized person, and he's expressing his heart through his literature, Sharanagati, to take shelter of the Lord. Because in this Sharanagati is the expression of the deepest and highest love for the Lord. And all the residents of Vrindavan are fully absorbed in the highest, most spontaneous level of Sharanagati. For us in this material world, we understand that we've forgotten Krishna, and there's so many mundane things that can cause us to forget Krishna, to violate our chastity to Krishna. There's so many dangers to our body, our mind, our possessions, everything. So we're taught to take shelter of Krishna in all these situations. When we're chanting the holy names, because we don't have love for Krishna, the way we get love for Krishna is we take shelter of Krishna with the desire for that love, and Krishna reciprocates and gives us love. But in the perfectly liberated state of Sri Nandanandana, Nanda Maharaj, he's taking shelter of Krishna out of his love for Krishna, for the protection of Krishna. So this is how Krishna is increasing the ecstasies of the dynamics of Nanda's love. And Krishna at the same time is relishing that love. And as Krishna makes Nanda and Yashoda afraid, Nanda and Yashoda become more deeply absorbed in love in Krishna, and Krishna is more deeply absorbed in tasting their love and reciprocating by giving his love. And what's about to happen? I said I'm not going to go beyond this verse, but a little glimpse. When Putana revealed her real form, what was she, 12 miles in size? And Krishna's just a couple days old, and he looks like a little baby that's just a couple days old, although he's supremely beautiful, but he's that tender and vulnerable looking. And here is this monstrous, witch-like, Rakshashi,
who all of a sudden, from a beautiful little human form, she becomes 12 miles in size, and she's screaming, "Child, leave me!" And Krishna's holding on to her breast. And she's trying with all of her. And can you imagine the power someone has if they're 12 miles in size? And she was somehow or other trying to pull Krishna off. And what was Krishna holding on to? You know, he was just going like this. Just with his little tiny lotus bud. We've seen the fingers of a two-day child. They're so tiny. They're almost mystical. They're just so tiny and so thin, and you know, they just look like if you breathe on them, they'll break. And that was the size of Krishna's fingers. He didn't make them grow. He didn't all of a sudden, his fingers went in order to accommodate the size of Putana. Oh, she was 12 miles, and his fingers are just about this long, about this thin. And, you know, there was no handles or anything. It's just, you know, flesh. And Krishna's just squeezing with those little fingers. And it's causing her so much pain. Unbearable pain. And she's, with all of her Rakshasi power, she had obviously done incredible amounts of mystic yoga to get these powers. Her entire focus in life is to rip this newborn baby off of her body. And he's just going, and he's happy. He's not struggling. We don't read in prayers that Krishna's sweating and some sort of a match where No, he's just effortlessly. And it's causing her unbearable pain. Now the Brijabasis, they couldn't understand what Krishna was really doing here. They just saw him as an innocent, little, helpless, newborn baby, and they're seeing Putana for what she was. Can you imagine how afraid they were? Can you imagine the anxiety they were in? Why was Krishna doing that to them? Abhaya Charanaravindare. When we take shelter of Krishna, we become fearless. But we see the people who have supremely taken shelter of Krishna are in the most fear. But their fear is transcendental because it's an expression of their love for Krishna. And they're taking shelter. After Putana, you know, falls to the ground, then what does Yashoda and the gopis do? They start doing puja to Narayan. They start doing puja to demigods. They start doing puja wherever they can do puja for Krishna's protection. And they're doing all these rituals to save Krishna from calamity. In bhakti, everything is about love. And in the highest realms of love, Krishna orchestrates the most mystically, apparently contradictory, inconceivable opportunities to dive deeper and deeper and deeper into the ecstasy of that love. These are a few words about today's verse. Is there any questions? Yes, Murari Gupta Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Still taking notes, very good.
Maharaj, sometimes we meet people who are apparently very well off, but they're suffering materially. So in their situation, they're not ready to take to Krishna consciousness, but they want to pursue some other cult or path or some other means. So how can we help them and guide them?
They take shelter of what? Some other...
They want to go to some cult or some demigods or like astrology or something, but they're not willing to come to Krishna directly, so...
You're asking how to help them.
Yes.
Just by seeing you, Krishna will bless them, for sure. Haribo, does that answer your question? He knew I was going to say that, that's why he asked the question. Actually, this is one of the great motivating forces of a devotee. When we feel compassion for someone, we understand that I'm not the doer. Srila Prabhupada, when he was on Jaladuta, he felt such deep compassion for all the people in the world. And specifically, Srila Prabhupada was going to America. As far as we know, Prabhupada never met an American in his life. I don't think there's any record in Prabhupada Lilamrita of Prabhupada meeting anyone from America. Is there? So he didn't, you know, he heard about Americans. They were very prominent materially. That was his idea. But he never met one. And here he was on his way to America. And he didn't know how they talked. He didn't know what they ate. He didn't know what they were like in one sense from a relative perspective. He didn't know if they'll understand a word of his words, but he was praying to Krishna. Unless you give me the words to reach their hearts, there's nothing I can do. In order for them to understand your message, it is you, Krishna, who is their only hope. Please give me the words, please give me the intelligence by which I could reach their hearts for you. Prabhupada said, I have no knowledge and I have no devotion, but you have given me this name, Bhaktivedanta. And now in this most crucial time of my life of executing the order of my spiritual master in the Western world at the age of 70 with no money, not knowing anybody to spread your movement, it's up to you to fulfill the purport of Bhaktivedanta. I'm just your puppet, Krishna. Just let me be your puppet and make me dance as you want me to dance. This is how he was praying. And I think he had similar realizations as you, people who are materially very well off, but very much distracted by material energy. How to reach them? Srila Prabhupada taught us how to reach them by completely humbling ourselves before God and taking shelter and praying for God to use us as an instrument of His grace, of His love, to uplift others. And by Prabhupada's own example also, he prepared himself for his journey for many years in Vrindavan by writing Srimad Bhagavatam. So similarly, the more we're the more we love Krishna, the more we'll be empowered to reach other people's hearts. So if we actually feel compassion for people who are suffering in this material world, then we will take shelter of the holy name, we will take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam, we'll take shelter of the satsang, of the association of devotees, we'll take shelter of Krishna in the temple, we'll take shelter of Krishna in all of these ways, so that we actually are connected to Krishna, to be empowered by Krishna. You're a doctor. If you really feel that you want to cure people, then you'll go to medical school and learn how to heal people, won't you? It's not that you sit home and think, oh, Krishna, I want to heal people. Krishna says, well, go to become a doctor, be my instrument. You say, no, you do it. No, if we want to be a part of it, we have to prepare ourselves. So our sadhana, our development of Vaishnava, of devotional character, is the ways by which we prepare ourselves to be instruments of Krishna's grace in the world. And that's the example of Srila Prabhupada. Does that answer your question? But because you already do all of these things, I go back to my first statement that just by seeing you, they will get great benefits. Especially your nice hairstyle. Last I saw him, he was a brahmachari with shaved heads, so I couldn't resist. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.